questions about anything? Okay, so you know the plan is to do a quiz on Starfinders. You won't need your Starfinder for this particular quiz, but next Friday's quiz will also be on the Starfinder, and for that one you do want to bring your Starfinder to class.
I was confused on the whole the degrees and stuff like that. How to find a certain fixed point on the map.
Which, so you're talking about the Starfinder map?
It was some questions where it was like, it would give you hours and time, and then it would give you a degree.
So I'm thinking so you
like
worked the wrong quiz.
And like 20 hours.
I'm thinking you worked. So that sounds like what we're doing today. So that's the SCO01 and SCO02 quiz. So another couple of minutes. another minute or so. So you want to make sure your names are on these things, and you can pass them this away. Got them all? So this dipper would hold water, right? So the map here is presented kind of square, but usually we present this oval more like that. And the meridian in this sort of oval, this is north, this is south. East isn't at the end. It's reversed, and remember we have expansion on the edge of the circular map, so things are distorted. The meridian and zenith is right in the center. So the line that goes from north to the north celestial pole through zenith, that's the meridian. The north celestial pole is the gourmet, the thing that is the thing rotates about. The celestial equator goes from exactly east to exactly west. Direction due north, I put on there, the direction east, zenith. Circle the Big Dipper. So mostly, if you circle the wrong thing, I can live with it as long as you then draw what's there. But the Big Dipper is sitting, I can't see it on this one that it's circled. Oh, it's sitting pretty much right below the North Pole. And if you turn it around, it looks kind of like that. It would hold water. Questions? Oh, one more. So today you should have in your hands a map that's called the SCO-01 and the SCO-02. The SCO-01 is this big square one, and the SCO-02 is this round one. We've got tutorials and quizzes on both of them, but we'll do them, I'll assign them just one at a time. But if you want to, you could do them both tonight if you wanted to. But technically speaking, what's due next time is the tutorial quiz on the SCO-01, and I want to have you read a sequence of pages that are below that, one that has to do with the SC maps and the sky maps, making a comparison between them, and a series of things by a kind of famous dead American astronomer, Simon Newcomb, who was prominent around 1900. Do note that we've got lab next week. The lab sign-up sheet is now over there if you forget what one you're scheduled for. So Friday I'll assign the other SCO-02, and we'll have another quiz on starfinders where you'll actually use your starfinder. So make sure you bring it to class. And you should bring all of these handouts to lab next week. Questions? So the way you actually use your starfinder, of course, is by matching the date and time. It's pretty easy to be confused between AM and PM, but you do just have to look at it carefully and put them t- together. And then this oval represents all of the sky, all of the stars that you can see. And of course, the edge of the oval then corresponds to the horizon, and the middle of the oval corresponds to zenith, the direction that's straight up. So we've been working on that sheet of vocabulary, and the words we particularly stressed last time had to do with circles on the celestial sphere. So if we have a circle whose radius is smaller than the radius of the sphere, that's called a small circle, something like the equator of a sphere that has a radius that's equal to the radius of the sphere, that's called a great circle. In order to locate things in the sky, we said that azimuth and altitude are a common way of doing that. So azimuth is how far you have to turn from north, and altitude is how far you have to go straight up in order to see that object. What I mean by straight up is part of a vertical circle. So a vertical circle goes up perpendicular to the horizon, and it goes all the way through zenith and back around the other side. So these terms transit and culminate. We know that the whole celestial sphere turns this way, and the meridian goes from north to south, so every day, every star has to go through the meridian. When it goes through the meridian, it's said to transit. And a word that means exactly the same thing, but kind of stresses a different aspect of it, is culminate. So if a star is rising in the east, it has altitude zero, and as it goes along, its altitude gets more and more and more. When it crosses the meridian, it has the maximum altitude it's going to have for that day. And the maximum nature of that is in the word culminate. So you should be able to locate all of these words on all of these maps that we've been talking about. Questions? So the maps that we've been dealing with have been stressing, quite naturally, the stars that we can see on a given time and on a given day. It would be nice to have maps that showed all the possible stars at once. So that's like a map of the globe, and we'd like to have all of it present if possible. And what you have in front of you, the SC001, is kind of like a Mercator projection. So you can think about taking a piece of paper and wrapping it around the equator, and then the stars that you have are the stars that are on this map. So that means that the central line that goes down here, that represents the equator, and generally speaking, the stars that are above the equator are north of the equator, and the ones that are below are south of the equator. Now, you know, if you try and make that map and expand it all the way to the pole, you get huge distortions. So for the top of the celestial sphere, what we have is a map that is made by projecting the polar region on a piece of paper. And you can see what you're going to have then is a map where right at the center you have the north celestial pole, and you see the stars that are around the pole at any time. So the way you use these maps is maybe a little bit confusing if you try and orient them in the sky. So if you have the, where to start here? If you have this big square map and you're trying to figure out what stars on this map correspond to the stars in the sky, that's a question that's easily answered by these other sorts of maps. But what you're going to want to do is to line up the equator on this map with the equator as it runs through the sky. So you're going to be holding the map kind of like this, right? So, and if you do that, do notice that if I hold this up, in fact, east is over there and west is over there, just the opposite of what it is on a kind of normal map of the United States. Okay? On the other hand, if you're looking east, the equator goes kind of up at an angle, so you'd be holding this map kind of like this, lining up the equator with the equator. And correspondingly in the west, you'd be holding it like that. Things can be most confusing in the north, right? Because then depending upon whether you're looking above the pole or to the left of the pole, you could have this thing oriented any old way. But you do want to have the north part of this map oriented to the north celestial pole. Okay? So the upshot of that is if a constellation is to the left or the right of a constellation on this piece of paper, it's not necessarily oriented that way in the sky, right? Because this piece of paper could be, in fact, held upside down if we're looking at something that's over the North Celestial Pole. Okay, so making the connection between the stars on this map and the stars in the sky is confusing. But this does allow us to map, once and for all of the stars in the sky, and to have a complete map of everything that could be above the horizon. Now you may wonder, how about the bottom of the celestial pole, the celestial sphere? We can't see those stars from here. But there is something called an SCO-03 that would give us the stars that we in fact can't see here that are near the south celestial pole. Okay, so if we were talking about the globe, we would have latitude and longitude in order to locate things on that sphere. And we're going to have the same sort of thing to locate positions in the sky. So the thing that corresponds to latitude, right, so we have a globe. Right, here's a little globe. Woo! We have a little globe, then here's the equator, and latitude is, of course, the thing that goes north and south. So the thing that's like that on the celestial sphere is called declination. And it's perfectly normal. It's measured in terms of degrees. And typically, if we have fractions of degrees, we talk about minutes. So one arc minute is 1/60th of a degree. Babylonians did things base 60. And an arc second, and one arc second is 1/60th of an arc minute. Okay, funny angular measurements, and mostly we'll just be concerned with degrees, but in fact we can subdivide degrees into minutes and seconds if we have to. If we think about the globe again, if we want to have the angle that goes this away, we've got longitude, and before we can start, we have to have a zero. So several hundred years ago, before people decided how to have a zero, there were some people, the French would measure their positions relative to Paris, and the English would measure positions relative to Greenwich, England. And basically, England won that argument, so the zero for longitude goes through Greenwich, England. So we need something like that for our celestial sphere. And the point of interest, the point that defines the zero for the thing that's like longitude, is called the vernal equinox. So what's the vernal equinox? Well, you can see that it's the intersection of two things. It's the intersection of the celestial equator and this curvy line. So what is the curvy line? The curvy line is the ecliptic. And I haven't given you a precise definition of the ecliptic yet. All I've said is that's where the planets and the moon tend to be. They might be a little bit above it, they might be a little bit below it. But I haven't said exactly what defines the ecliptic. What defines the ecliptic is the location of the sun. Right, so everything in the sky rises and sets and has a position on the celestial sphere. The planets move around a little bit. They could be in this constellation or that constellation from month to month. And the same thing applies to the sun. The sun has a changing position on the celestial sphere, and that position over a year is plotted on this curvy line. And if you look at up close and personal on this line, you'll see various dates. Those are the dates when the sun is in that particular position. Okay? So if the sun is above the celestial equator, kind of like that, what that's going to mean is that the sun is going to rise north of east, and it's going to get higher than it would normally get in the sky, and it's going to set north of west. So that's summer. On the other hand, if the sun is south of the celestial equator, then it's always going to be below the equator. So the sun is going to rise south of east, It's not going to get as high in the sky, and it's going to set south of west. So you might know that the year is divided into four parts, right? Roughly speaking, summer, winter, fall, etc. There are precise times that are particularly of interest. And two of those are called equinoxes. And so I'm going to make a little chart here. So we've got two equinoxes. We've got the spring equinox, which is the vernal equinox. And we've got the fall equinox, or the autumnal equinox. And you might know those dates. Spring starts on about 21 March, at least still lots of snow on the ground here. And the fall equinox is about 21 September. And if you look at this map, you will see, in fact, that pretty much when the sun is at this location, the date will read as 21 March, and you can read the date here, and it's pretty much 21 September. The precise dates of the equinox can move around a little bit. So I pick 21, not because it's always on 21, but because it's, I hope, an easier number to remember. So what's special about the equinox, of course, is that the sun is on the meridian. Excuse me, the sun is on the celestial equator, so it has declination 0 degrees. And by definition, I said the right ascension, oops, I guess I haven't used those terms yet, the angle that's measured along the thing that's like longitude is called right ascension. And it's going to be 0 for the vernal equinox. Okay, so the rest of the seasons are defined by the sun getting as far as possible from the celestial equator. So we have the longest and shortest day of the year. So those are solstices. So the summer solstice, roughly speaking, is going to be 21 June. And if you go to this map, that's where the sun is up here, as high as it's ever going to get. And if you try and read that number, it's pretty much about 23 and a half degrees. And we have the winter solstice, 21 December, when the sun is as far south as it's ever going to be, right here, with a declination of minus 23 and a half degrees. Now, we divided things up into quarters, so pretty much the right ascension, the thing that's like longitude, should be like 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270 degrees, and back to zero. But unfortunately, that's not how we do it. We don't measure right ascension in terms of degrees. For reasons that are, I'm sure, not clear, at least initially, we're going to measure it in what are called hours, minutes, and seconds. And 1 hour is the same thing as 15 degrees. And that works out so that 24 hours is equal to a full circle, namely 360 degrees. So if you look on this map, you'll see circles here and here and here and here. They may look like straight lines, but remember they go over the top and come back around. Those are called hour circles because they are circles that the right ascension value in hours is a constant. Right? So here's 0 hours, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours. Quarter of the way around, of course. Quarter of 24 is 6. And we're going to subdivide an hour into minutes and seconds. Now, a minute along the equator in terms of right ascension is not the same thing as an arc minute. Those are two different things, even though they have the same name. So we know that this is going to be at 6 hours and 12 hours and 18 hours, then we'd be back around to zero. Okay, so you basically want to memorize this chart for use on exams. Okay, so the sun is moving at a slow but pretty much uniform rate of about a degree per day along the ecliptic. Half of the time it's north of the celestial equator and the sun is above the horizon for more than 12 hours. Half of the time the sun is below the celestial equator and the sun is above the horizon for less than 24 hours. And of course the whole celestial sphere is going to make one rotation in about 24 hours. Well, why measure right ascension in terms of hours? I'm not sure there's a great explanation for it, but what is true, of course, is that your meridian, of course, which is going to be a line like this that goes from north to south through zenith, the meridian is going to move along on this map at a rate of 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So if we know where the meridian is now, we can figure out where the meridian is going to be in the future or the past, according to moving 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So where is the meridian? That is to say, where roughly are the stars that we're going to see at various times? Well, if you look at this little, it's actually in a different spot on the ones you have. If you look at this little note down here at the bottom, what it says is that each hour circle that's down here, each hour circle is labeled with the date on which that hour circle will be on your meridian at 8 p.m. Okay. So if I want to know what stars I'm going to see, for example, at about December 20th, I can go to the corresponding circle that's labeled December 20th, about here, and the stars that are to the left or the right of the meridian are the stars that I'm going to see in the sky. What happens at 9 p.m.? Well, the meridian has moved forward 1 hour. And so I'm going to see slightly different stars as they transit the meridian. Okay, so right ascension, declination, equinoxes, the definition of the ecliptic precise in terms of the location of the sun. What else haven't we covered yet? So hour circles are circles that have a constant right ascension, and therefore they have to include the north and south pole. Talked about right ascension, declination. The diurnal circles are small circles. Those are circles that have constant declination. Zodiac hour angle. So the hour angle is the angle westward along the celestial equator from the observer's meridian to the hour circle that goes through the object. So an object that is transiting has an hour angle that's 0 degrees. And as time goes on, it's going to get further and further to the west, and its hour angle is going to increase at a rate of 1 hour of hour angle per hour of time. Okay. So, one thing that's another point to keep in mind is what stars could you see at noon, for example, today? So, what defines noon, and this was the original definition of noon, it's changed a little bit over time as we'll talk about eventually, is that the sun was as high in the sky as it's ever going to get during that day at noon, right? High noon. And what that means, of course, is that the sun is transiting. It's culminating at noon, which means the sun is on the meridian at noon. And we can see for any given date where the sun is, right? So currently, if we pick out, you know, the end of January, at noon, this is going to be our meridian. And so the star, if we could blot out the sun, if we had an eclipse of the sun, these are the stars that we would see either to the left or the right of the sun. Evening stars and morning stars. So often we observe at sunset just because it's a convenient time. The stars are getting dark, but occasionally you can also observe when the sun is rising. What stars are you likely to see at those times? So in order to answer that question, first of all, figure out where the sun is on the ecliptic, right? So go to the date that corresponds to the little tick marks on the ecliptic, and that's where the sun is going to be. And if we're talking about sunset, put the sun on the western horizon. Okay? So if this is where the sun is, imagine the sun is on the western horizon. The stars that we're going to see are going to be the ones that are to the left of the sun. On the other hand, 12 hours earlier, when the sun was just rising over here in the east, the stars that we would see would be the ones that are to the right of the sun. Okay? So we've got lots of ways of figuring out what stars we can see. We've got the little tick marks, which are pretty convenient for normal evening observing, right? About 8 o'clock, and we can move forward or backwards from that time. We can figure out things from the location of the sun on the ecliptic, and then work our way forward or backwards from those times. But generally speaking, it's kind of hard to make a connection between this map and what's actually in the sky. Generally speaking, only about half of these stars are going to be up at any particular time, and the other half will be below the horizon. And usually the starting point for figuring out what you can see is figuring out where the meridian is. Okay. So the motions of the planets on the celestial sphere, you notice that we have a line for the ecliptic, but we don't have a line that shows where the moon is. We don't have a line that shows where Mars is. We don't have a line where it shows where Jupiter is. We'll learn that all of the paths of those guys are a little bit irregular, or at least not obvious, so we can't put a path that's going to be the path of the moon for the next 50 years. It's just not going to work out that way. The moon has a variable path over that sort of time. Not so for the ecliptic. The ecliptic is very, 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 very steady, and the sun is always going to be at these spots for centuries in the future. Interestingly enough, maybe not so the North Celestial Pole. The North Celestial Pole is gradually shifting its position. So if you go back and read Aristotle, Aristotle says the same things we've been saying, that looks as if the stars are all connected to the celestial sphere and it all seems to be rotating about a point. Too bad there isn't a bright star at that point. And that's because there wasn't a bright star at that point when Aristotle was writing. The location of the North Celestial Pole gradually shifts. And if you look at the SCO01 map, it's got a little SCO02 map, it's got a little circle here that shows the changing location of the North Celestial Pole. Now, during your lifetime, unless great advances in medicine, the Polaris will always be close to the North Celestial Pole. So it's only when we're talking about centuries that we have this gradual shift in the location of the North Celestial Pole. And of course, if the poles are going to shift, then the celestial equator is going to shift, and the location of the vernal equinox is going to shift. All of those things change with time. But the fact that the ecliptic is next to this star at this time, that's not going to change for millions of years. Okay. So let's spend a second to talk about the SCO02. So you're used, I take it, to reading these sorts of maps where you can read off the longitude and latitude by just going rectangularly. For a polar map, the thing that corresponds to declination is how far you are from the center. Right? If you're right at the center, then you have a declination of 90 degrees. You're at the North Celestial Pole. And as we move away from that, the declination is getting closer and closer to the equator. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And you can read those values off from these scales. On the other hand, as we go around this away, we're going to different right ascensions. And you can read those right ascensions off at the edge of these, at the edge of the circular map. So these things, these straight lines, are parts of our circles. These circular lines are part of diurnal circles. Whereas in this map, our circles look like that. They're straight lines vertically, and diurnal circles are straight lines that are horizontal. Questions? Okay, so kind of no surprise. Plan is to get in groups of three and to work on this project. The first thing you're going to want to do is to fill out this table to figure out what constellation holds these stars and what's the right ascension and declination of these stars. And we kind of go on from there. Questions? So you're a group of three. You guys are a group of three. You guys were a group of three. You guys are a group of three.
I have a question. Is both, like that top part where it says homework, is that what we need to do for Friday? And then like Friday's homework is what we need for...
Yeah, so usually weekend. I only give you one of them. But I mean, the SCO01 and the SCO02 we're kind of doing together, but I only want to assign as homework to do one of them at a time. If you want, you could do them both tonight. But as a matter of fact, the SCO02 isn't due until whatever Tuesday or...
And that's when our quiz is?
And the quiz on the next...
Starfinder?
The star. We'll have another Starfinder quiz on Friday.
Oh, on Friday, okay. Mm-hmm.
So on SCO01.
So due next Friday is the online quiz on the SCO01, and I'll also give you another quiz on the Starfinder. Due Tuesday is going to be an online quiz on the SCO02. Say again?
Should I just make a group of four?
So do we have, yes, I don't see any. Yep. Does everyone have one of these things now? Yeah, the sun's a star, but it has a variable location, right? So that isn't Sunday, November 10th. That's the sun on November 10th.
Perseus.